Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
Hey, I am your host. I am here, and I'm just delighted to be here today with two rather amazing men from very different perspectives. One of them is, his name is Mikey Weinstein, and Mikey, you actually were counsel in the Reagan administration, am I correct?
Reagan administration, yes. I was assistant general counsel in the Reagan White
Thanks
House.
Thanks for the correction.
Okay, well, my boss for
I
a while
I went to his funeral and I still said it wrong.
That's okay.
His book is With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military. And also we have Dr. Richard Moss, who the moment I saw his book and I picked it up, I was attracted to it. It's called The Mandala of Being, Discovering the Power of Awareness. And I thought, here's Mikey who's put his life's work into making things work inside of our political government. And here we have Dr. Richard Moss, who is one of the experts in Be Here Now. You know, that would be like Ram Dass or something of that nature. I was very attracted to him as well, Richard. So his book, as I said, is The Mandala of Being, Discovering the Power of Awareness. And what I wanted to do with each of you is to... Mikey, would you let us know what you perceive your mission in life to be?
Well, my mission right now is to try to restore the constitutionally mandated wall separating metaphysical and physical, spiritual and temporal, church and state, in the technologically most lethal organization ever created by humankind, which is our honorable and noble U.S. Marine Corps, Navy, Army, Air Force.
So for Americans that aren't particularly aware of the depth of what you have just said, perhaps you could flesh that out a little bit for them.
Yeah, they need to go to our website, which is www.militaryreligiousfreedom.org, and that will explain everything. You know, I'm not sure how much you told the audience before I came on or not, but you know, I was a lawyer for Reagan in the White House for 3.5 years. I was Ross Perot's general counsel. I come from a conservative military Republican family, and for 46 months we've been fighting the attempt by Christian fundamentalists to take over the U.S. Marine Corps, Navy, Army, and Air Force. And for anyone who's listening, again, this is clearly the most underreported story in America and the world. And just go to www.militaryreligiousfreedom.org. And as you mentioned, I have a book out, With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military.
Well, I'd like to actually have you say a little bit more about it, because I know that all of our listeners are not going to hop to their computers. If you could just give listeners some idea of what it is that made you say something has to be done here.
Well, I think if anybody has children, it's something that is, you know, you never want to see your children be hurt or made sport of. My youngest son just graduated from the Air Force Academy in May of this year, and he's the sixth member of my family to go to the United States Air Force Academy, including myself. And when I found out that my kids were enduring unspeakable anti-Semitism at the U.S. Air Force Academy, I got very, very interested. And then I've kind of moved from point A in my life where if I ever had witnessed any anti-Semitism, I didn't really care if I lived or died, somebody was going to get a beating, to point B where I am now, where when I see religious discrimination of any sort in the U.S. military, I don't care if I live or die, someone's going to get a beating. And our Military Religious Freedom, our Military Religious Freedom Foundation last week went over 6,000 people have come to us that are active duty members of the Marine Corps, U.S. Marine Corps, Navy, Army, and Air Force, that are basically spiritual rape victims, that are tormentees by these fundamentalist Christians in the military up and down the chain of command. And 96% of them are Christian, 3/4 Protestant, 1/4 Catholic.
Well, we don't know what Christian really is here, do we, Mikey? One of the things that I thought you might address was the game that was planned for our U.S. troops to be played, the video game.
Yeah, there was a group called Operation Straight Up in the Pentagon. It's actually backed by some self-proclaimed kickboxer named Jonathan Spinks, who seems very hard to find out. This guy actually did ever beat anybody in kickboxing. And one of the Baldwin brothers, Stephen Baldwin, the group, another one of these parachurch fundamentalist Christian organizations that had gotten itself inextricably intertwined into the the great favor of a very willing, Pentagon filled with lick-spittle supplicants to this religious right. They were preparing freedom packets, which they were sending over to our troops, which included, diaper wipes, cookies, extremely proselytic material written both in English and Arabic, and since less than 0.1% of our troops can speak Arabic, you can imagine what they're supposed to do with it. And, of course, also the Left Behind Eternal Forces Killer Convert video game, in which caused all the stir last holiday season, because it's you can take the sides of the Antichrist, which, of course, is the United Nations, or the side of Jesus' stormtroopers, and you get points for killing people if they refuse to convert to accept Christianity.
So as I recall, there were like points for killing people or something.
Right, you get points for killing people, you get points for converting people. It's the fact that we were going to send this into a war zone, where we're already, fighting Wahhabist Islamic fascists intent on imposing Sharia law on the rest of us. It looks a little bit difficult, it's a little hard to say don't do that when we're, we have, Christian fundamentalist fascists trying to impose their own biblical worldview on everybody.
Now here we've got Mikey Weinstein working for us, okay? And when I was talking to Barbara Marx Hubbard, do you know her, Richard?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so Barbara Marx Hubbard was telling me that we are actually in the most evolutionary possible times present. that we are in a state of being in which we could have a leap that would be as significant as getting up off of our knees and walking. And that this is a time of when the butterfly emerges and the caterpillar is killed off. Now, Mikey's talking about a lot of things that are really truly happening in the world. And how do we take the mandala of being and the discovering the power of awareness and bring it into a world that is just plain downright scary right now?
First of all, I hear Mikey's passion, and I also can understand and identify with that we can't just when we see injustice we have to act.
Yes.
What basically I heard is the inculcation of belief is being fostered. It's being fostered all the time in all of us in different ways. Our minds are telling us what's true when we don't know in reality what is true. We end up making true what we believe. So what the mandala of being is starting from a very different point of view than your other guest, I'll just put it in the perspective of me trying to write that book. I travel all over the world. I work with people who are seeking to grow in consciousness, who are struggling because they create a lot of suffering in their marriages, who are struggling because they have ideals that are very difficult to live in their lives or in the world. The world isn't always that gentle with them, and I look out at the world. We all read the news. We hear that there is incredible, and there's incredible injustice. There's incredible violence. There's incredible conflict. I should take out the word incredible because it just simply is. And where does it start? Well, it starts in our minds. It starts in what we choose to believe about who we are and who others are. And when I sat down and wrote this book, I said, I have to answer the question in a way that's timeless, that doesn't make someone bad and someone wrong, but just simply says, when we are deeply confused about the nature of our own minds, we are going to believe the stories we tell about others. So if I'm identified with being a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim, and I don't perceive that my own awareness of that is more true than my beliefs themselves, and what I've just said there is subtle.
So say it again, because I'm a little slow this afternoon.
Sure. We're born, we're not a complete tabula rasa, we're not a blank slate. We have an impulse to learn, we have an impulse to explore our world, an impulse to bond. We need to do those things to survive.
We also have DNA memories.
And we have some memories, yeah, that may carry over from previous. We don't really know. It depends upon what you believe. But how to answer this, how to say this, it's enculturation. We are very ignorant about how we become enculturated into what we're not born Jews, we're not born Muslims, we're not born Americans. If anything, we're born earthlings, we're born male or female, but we're not born with the strictures on being women that are exist in different degrees in different cultures, or the so-called patriarchal mentality that influences men and women. These are all enculturated processes. Can any human being escape these things? Well, that's what the spiritual journey, not the religious journey, not the journey of belief in a particular way of creating community, creating communities of identity, creating ideas about God, but is there an actual path within any human being that is deeper than or more essential than enculturation, religious enculturation, national enculturation, and so forth? And of course the answer is there is. And what that is a deeper level of awareness that's available in every person, but it only operates in the present moment when I turn and say to myself, okay, now I'm telling myself I'm a Christian or a Muslim, or I'm telling myself that people...
Hey, well, here I am. I'm in school, right, Mikey? One of your children?
Right.
Sorry.
And
I'm in school, and I'm being tortured because they say I'm a Jew, and that's why they're torturing.
Well, let's be careful. It's not... Really, this is important. It's not a school. It's a military academy, like West Point is to Army, Annapolis is
right,
to...
Right, it's a major institution.
Yeah, this is there for... But guys, we're way beyond that for this story. The operative numbers, and unfortunately, I've only got a couple more minutes left. I didn't know it was going to go this long, but the operative numbers are 737 and 132. That would be 737 and 132.
Of what?
I'm about to say. The Pentagon will admit to the fact that we have 737 U.S. military installations is actually closer to 1,000 scattered around the world as we garrison the globe in 132 countries. And on every one of them now, we have a dominionist, fundamentalist organization, just like Al-Qaeda, called the Officers Christian Fellowship for the officers, and for the enlisted folks, it's called the Christian Military Fellowship. You understand the difference between officer and enlisted?
Yep.
Okay. They have a tripartite goal that they're unabashed about, and it's a goal that they all consider much more critically important than the oaths they all swore out to preserve and protect, support and defend the Constitution. I can't make this stuff up. It's right on their website. Goal number one, they want to see, quote, a spiritually transformed United States military. Goal number two, with ambassadors for Christ in uniform, which parenthetically hasn't worked out too well for planet Earth the last 2,000 years. I'm sure you also agree, Richard.
Yeah.
Number three, empowered by the Holy Spirit. We don't have a Pentagon anymore, ladies and gentlemen, who are listening to this show or watching on the Internet. We have a Pentecostalgon, and our Department of Defense has been turned into a Christo-fascistic faith-based initiative. This from a Republican, a conservative, and a military person.
But, you know, we're never going to solve these problems at this level. You have to do what you're doing, Mikey. I respect that completely. You have to make people conscious of it so they can make choices. If we're conscious of things, we can make choices. But you're describing people who believe their enculturation. They believe their ideas about who they are, about how the world operates, about what the destiny of human beings are, and most important, they believe their stories, and they're always stories, they're just nothing but stories. They believe their stories about the nature of God and what the human relationship to God should be, and it has nothing to do. For a religious person, God creates thoughts. One thought after another. How do I obey God? How do I do this? This is how it should be. For a person who's deeply spiritual, God stops the mind utterly. God ends thought. God creates a receptivity, an openness. God, as an idea, puts us into the present moment profoundly. And so you're talking about a fundamental problem that's gone on forever. You're talking about people at a level of development. I wrote a book called The Second Miracle. The first miracle is that we get an ego that gives us a sense of separate self. Well, it exists as a separate self because it believes in its stories about the past, it believes in its ideas about the future, it believes in its stories about who each individual is, and it believes in its stories about
Richard,
who others are.
So, Richard, how do we get a bridge?
There is no bridge at this level. There is no bridge. You can't solve it. You know, Einstein said long ago, you cannot solve a problem at the level of the problem. You can't solve the problem of a group of people, most people, at the level of their egos, who believe things and want to foster their beliefs and want to transform other peoples and people and change them to their beliefs. You can't solve it at that level. You have to go to the level of how does the mind become identified with belief and how do you transform your relationship?
Is that an eventuality? Isn't that you're talking about the end of the process? Is it Keith Olbermann? Do you know who I'm talking about, Mikey?
What's the question?
I think the guy's name is Keith Olbermann. He's like MSNBC.
Keith Olbermann, what about him?
Yeah, have you heard his conversations?
I watch him every night. Which one?
I'm astounded at his clarity.
Oh, yeah, well, he's had a recent one just focusing on the Assistant Attorney General. I think Mr. Levin was his name. I forget exactly. The one who, when he was asked to determine whether or not waterboarding was torture,
yeah, exactly.
Went out and he had himself waterboarded. But look, the bottom line is that the way of getting, we cannot get out of this mess using the minds of the people that got us in this mess, which is another way of saying what, Richard, I think you just said regarding from Einstein. The people that got us in this mess are not the same minds that are going to be able to get us out. And but I want to be specific. You know, we're talking about the fact that we've lost the U.S. military to one particular religious biblical worldview. We actually do have WMD when Saddam did not, and that's a very serious problem.
Well, and one of the things that I was looking at, and I wish I could remember the person that was on the show, but of good capability and quality, and they were saying that actually we're being run by about 12-13% of the population. Would you agree or disagree?
We're being run by our egos.
Okay.
We're being run by a completely uninformed mind. You know, when we say
that running our country.
When you say a human being is conscious, you have to say, what do you mean conscious? Conscious like a computer running through certain software, or really conscious? And the problem is that people who do the things Mikey is talking about have minds and egos, and they can wreak tremendous destruction, whether they do it as Muslim fundamentalists or as evangelical Christians.
No, you're right, Richard. There's actually the people we're fighting. I'm not fighting Christianity. I'm not even fighting evangelical Christianity. I and, our foundation, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, on the web at militaryreligiousfreedom.org, we are fighting a small subset of evangelical Christianity, which has a very long technical name, so bear with me. It's called premillennial, dispensational, reconstructionist, dominionist, evangelical, fundamentalist Christianity. Sorry.
Oh, my God. Now, what percentage
is about? I'm going to answer your question. It's about 12.6% of the American public, about 38 million. Unfortunately, guys, I have to go. I'm way past the time that I thought we were going to be on.
Oh, well, they gave you we're in a different time zone, and that's the problem.
Well, no, my scheduler told me that we were going to go to 105. Oh, gosh, okay, I guess somehow we got mixed up on this.
Because it's 12:19 right now.
Yes, I know.
Our time. And we're honoring the JFK Profile in Courage and Buzz Flash Wings of Justice nominated author Mikey Weinstein with God on Our Side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup, and America's Military and founder and president of MilitaryReligiousFreedom.com, I guess, huh?
No, .org.
Oh, .org.
Right.
There's a big event for you in Los Angeles tomorrow evening between 6 and 8, cocktails and buffet, as I understand, put together by the always fabulous Eileen Proctor. And if you want to join us in that event, I'll be there. Mikey will be there at 310-271-5857. You can make arrangements to attend this very special evening. It's being sponsored by some of the... I don't want to use the word activist. I mean people that are active. I want to say that in a different kind of way. Activist has a kind of almost rebel sound to it. And this isn't just about being a rebel. This is about standing up and saying, what can I do? I've seen enough. I've heard enough. And that's what I love about this gentleman we were talking about from MSNBC. He's got such a clarity of conversation. He's so pointed. And the deal is, I tell you, Richard, I'm thinking that people have to get what's going on first, like this whole conversation on waterboarding.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real thing. Do you remember the man's name, Mikey, that actually went and got himself waterboarded so he could talk honestly about it?
I know he was the Assistant Attorney General, and he was asked to leave the Bush administration because, of course, he wouldn't toady up and just do what Gonzalez did, who, by the way, was with me as a cadet at the Air Force Academy. You don't hear much about that. He was there for 2 years and left before graduating. But I think the last name was Levin, was the
general. Yes.
And he went out and, and
Hammer,
tried to
something
decide.
Like that.
Yeah, he was trying to, this is, and Keith Olbermann had this on either last night or the night before, this gentleman said, I'm going to go out, and he had himself waterboarded. And he said, even though I knew that they were going to take care of me, if I got to the difficult point, they were going to stop it and make sure I was fine, he made it clear he could not stop the feeling from within that he was drowning to death. And, look, in World War II, we defeated fascistic Hitler, Mussolini, and Tojo in just 44 months. And guess what? We did it without becoming fascistic Mussolini, Hitler, and Tojo. You know, must we become, the Christian Taliban and Christian Al-Qaeda to defeat, the genuine Al-Qaeda and Taliban?
Well, hopefully not.
I
mean, if we do, then we're, as a society, then we're making that choice, sadly. But you know, Mikey, I'm completely with you. It's a painful thing to see such ignorance and for people to believe that they know what they're doing, they know what they're talking about in a way that divides us from each other so terribly in this country and with us in the world and throughout the world. But this is a very old story.
But don't you think this is part of what's causing the economy to crash and everything too as well, Richard?
Yep. I think it's all related because we're not sharing a vision that ennobles us, you know.
I used to be proud to be an American, and I went to the Nobel Laureates Conference in Rome in 2005, and I ended up apologizing to the leaders of the world who were there because I was said, you know, we didn't elect this guy. We created him, but we didn't elect him formally. And it was like every single person that was representing a country stood up and had something to say about the United States of America, and none of it was pretty.
Well, look, I'm not ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We still have a great, 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 wonderful country. It is very ill right now, and, you know, we're dealing with Homer and Marge Simpson America. You know, they think that if you talk to them about actually some level of sacrifice that they respect, they'll think you mean spending three chilly nights on an air mattress in front of Circuit City to make sure you get your PlayStation 3, right?
Or the biggest, newest plasma.
Well, this is what we're dealing with, you know, and we have a constitution. It's the first time in the history of our humankind that a nation state created a governing document that did not invoke the name of someone's particular deity. It is religion that is dividing us. And, you know, just like in science, all scientific disciplines are derivative from the mothership discipline of what? Mathematics, right? And in this country today, pretty much every major social issue, stem cell research, the environment, abortion, the war, intelligent design, creationism versus evolution, it's all derivative from the mothership of religion. And people that have ignored the fact that in this country we assiduously worked very, very, very hard, our founding fathers did, founding framers, to not have religion be part of government. Which is why we don't just have the separation of church and state in the First Amendment, which the religious right, of course, believes is a myth like Bigfoot, Popeye, and, you know, the Easter Bunny. They put in Clause 3, Article 6 of the body of the Constitution, which went into effect in December of 1789. It took the Bill of Rights another 15 months until March of 1791 to go into effect. But Clause 3, Article 6 says, look, we're not going to ever have a religion test for any position in this federal government. And yet, where was Homer Simpson America on Tuesday, July 12, 2005? When on the front page of the newspaper most reviled by the Pentagon, the New York Times, the number two ranking chaplain among the thousands in the U.S. Air Force Chaplains Corps, Brigadier General Cecil R. Richardson, announces a new U.S. Air Force policy to, quote, the Air Force will now, quote, reserve its right to evangelize anyone it determines to be unchurched. You know, so not to Islamize, Buddhize, Hinduize, Atheize, or Judaize. But I guess, you know, there's no religion test except the U.S. military in the form of the Air Force will hold up a religion Geiger counter to anybody. And if the test comes back and says, hey, you're unchurched, why, we reserve the right to evangelize you. That's just like if you're a restaurant owner, you reserve the right not to serve food to somebody without shirt and shoes.
Oh, I got it. Listen, we're on the air with Mikey Weinstein with God on Our Side and Richard Moss, the Mandala of Being. And we want to thank our sponsors, Roberto's Bungalows of San Francisco, Nayarit, San Pancho, Mexico. Steve and Diana, they have five wonderful bungalows down there. If you're ready to escape this conversation and have a really nice time in a beautiful little Mexican town, I can highly, highly, highly recommend these innkeepers and these fabulous human beings. They're just, it's a wonderful place to be, and we all gather on the beach for sunsets. You can reach them. They have a U.S. number here at 971-239-4120. That's 971-239-4120. And tell them you heard about it on Waking Up in America, Vital Issues. As I said, we're on the air with Richard Moss and Mikey Weinstein, and we want you to visit our site, wakinguminamerica.com. Once again, that's wakinguminamerica.com. And interestingly enough, guys, I actually had something put on the site today, which is a plea from Michael J. Fox for his stem cells to be made available to people that need them. And when you see Michael J. Fox going through his conversation with Katie Couric and his trembling from Parkinson's, which he admitted was exaggerated by his agitation, you just want to get behind the stem cell thing and see that it happens. So check out the video on our site. It's rather amazing. Also, for We want to thank the Koning Company. For those that that have sinus problems or neck or shoulder tension or want to get your lymphatic system assisted, check out koningcompany.com, and that's koningcompany.com, or call 310-455-8623 to learn more about the 5,000-year-old process called ear coning. For emotional clearing, call 310-455-8623 for a free half-hour demonstration, and you're not going to believe the things that you can dump consciousness-wise very quickly. I have to tell you that without this process, I would not have survived Bush's inauguration, so that you know. So we love that you're here. We want you to visit Richard Moss's website. He actually has a free course that he's offering, a teleseminar. It's not a seminar, actually.
No, it's a free web course.
A free web course, and that's at Richard Moss, and that's MOSS.com. And also, you want to hop over to Mikey's site. So, Mikey, you said that was militaryfreedom.org?
Nope. It's www.militaryreligiousfreedom.org. And I have to make apologies. I've got to go in about 2 minutes, guys.
Great. So is there anything you'd like to say before you sign off, Mikey?
Well, I would just ask people that at this point it is useless to consider if you believe what we're doing that it's helpful to write letters and do things like that. You really have to actually make an effort to donate.
Where do you want the letters directed? To who in particular?
Well, the best thing is no letters. No letters or phone calls are useful at all. They're like weed whackers. They just knock everything back about for 3 or 4 days. The weeds. The best thing now is to get on our website, and we're a nonprofit charity. Everybody needs tax deductions at the end of the year, and you can donate right on the website. Everything is a full tax deduction at www.militaryreligiousfreedom.org. We need help. The dark side that we're fighting of Christian fundamentalism in the U.S. military, where all the nukes are, is insanely well financed, and we need your help. That's the best thing we can do.
And what would be the best thing that you could imagine creating for the future, say, in the next year?
A federal lawsuit victory against the Pentagon. We're already in federal court against them, and getting a federal court decree forcing them to honor their oaths to support something we call the Constitution.
So do we even have a Constitution left?
Not in the U.S. military, we don't. And I'm sure many other places, but my view is it's not that other issues don't matter. The whales and whether we have under God in the Pledge of Allegiance in California, or whether we teach intelligent design versus creationism in Kansas, none of that's going to matter if we lose the U.S. military. There were several great Cold War movies that came out of Hollywood. I'm sure you saw them all: Failsafe, Doctor Strangelove, On the Beach, and another one starring Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster called 7 Days in May, about a military takeover of the United States. And we're about a Tiger Woods 2-inch putt away from that happening, except it's a fundamentalist Christian military takeover of this country.
No, I understand what you're talking about with that. In fact, I thought we'd already been taken over, so.
Well, I look forward to seeing you tomorrow in Los Angeles. And, Richard, it was very, very a privilege and an honor to make your acquaintance, even over just the radio.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
All right, guys. You have a great day.
You too.
Take care.
Be here now, Val. Here now. I get scared. Richard, I wake up some nights and I'm scared. I always said when I read books about in World War II about the Nazi takeover,
that it couldn't
happen. I'd leave the country. Notice I'm talking about how I have land in San Pancho, Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I want to stay here, though, and I want to be part of the consciousness shift, and I'm glad that I have people like you and Carolyn Anderson has been on Waking Up in America. Marianne Williamson has been on. I needed you to be on today. You can see why.
Well, yeah, but there's not much that I could really say because what Mikey's talking about at
true.
That level is very, very real.
Right. So how do we do what Barbara Marks Hubbard would? That's my whole point. It is real. But if I have nothing to reach for when I listen to this, it freaks me out. As I mentioned to you before the show, I saw a political card.
Well, let's take some of the answers that have come, the big answers to these issues. Let's take the Buddha, for example, in Buddhism.
Okay.
The Buddha said that for all people, all human beings, at the level of what we mean when we say me or I, which is our ego or our identity, and when we say me, I'm a Jew, or me, I'm a Christian, or me, I'm a soldier, or a Marine, or whatever, when we say that, at that level, life is suffering. And what the fundamentalists believe is that if we can get everybody to do what we think, then you know, Jesus is going to come back, he's going to defeat the devil, and there's going to be the kingdom of heaven on earth. It's all a fairy tale. But people believe it. And when they believe it, they live crazily. But in the process of living it, they're suffering. They're suffering because they hate others. They're suffering because they distrust others. They're suffering because they need more power. They're suffering because they're saying what is true and then having to repress their own lives to live inside of their own framework of belief. It is suffering. Okay, so the Buddha said, if you don't understand your own ego, if you don't get past that issue in yourself, that whole, if you don't get that, that the suffering starts out with your sense of me and then what it believes in, what its stories are that it substantiates itself, how it imagines the future, how it judges other people, and how you judge yourself. If you don't get past that, you just suffer. And there is a way past that suffering, and the way is a practice, and the practice will set you free. Jesus says something very similar and different. He basically says that the higher is always a sacrifice to the lower. If you have reached a higher state of consciousness, you can't oppose a person at a lower state of consciousness by engaging them at the level of their behavior. So if they want to hit you, you can't just hit them back. I mean, I understand.
Turn the other cheek comes from?
Yes, that's right. But we don't understand what that really means. There's a moment in Gandhi's life, he's wandering. It's actually after part of his main political area, but he's wandering trying to bring consciousness and understanding to remote parts of India. And at one point, he is literally attacked by a giant of a man. And Gandhi just looks the man continuously in the eye, goes limp. And his heart, Gandhi's heart, it stays open because this man who's ready to murder Gandhi because of what he believes Gandhi's support of is primarily Hindu and doesn't support Sikh and doesn't support Muslim Indians and so forth. But Gandhi's softness, Gandhi's receptivity, Gandhi's surrender, and this man just cries and becomes not only a follower but a bodyguard and a friend for the rest of his life to Gandhi.
You know, it's so interesting because I've been thinking about Gandhi a lot the last week, wondering how to get there. So,
well, but that's the point.
So glad that you're here. I mean, I actually took the journey over to India to find out what had happened to Indira Gandhi. I saw where she died. I heard the stories of the Sikhs.
Yeah, but Indira Gandhi is not related to Mahatma Gandhi.
No, but I'm saying that was the opposite extreme from him.
Well, Mahatma Gandhi was remarkable because he faced challenges that, well, he's basically brought nonviolent political action into.
Were two opposite people operating in India, and I found it incredibly moving. The comparison, if you want, I don't even like the word comparison. The balance between the two.
Between who and who?
To Indira and Gandhi.
Right.
And I've had Arun Gandhi on the radio show before, so I was thinking of tracking up his number and finding it again, because it seems to me that that's the only thing that's going to work here. Am I right or wrong? Or is there more to it than I'm seeing?
Well, I was trying to answer it as best as I understand it. Throughout time, there have been people who have realized a fundamental realization, a change of consciousness, who have understood something about the nature of the way the mind constructs suffering and the nature of the way the mind imprisons us in beliefs about who we are and who others are, about what's true and what's not true at the level of our minds. At that level, you can't solve the problem of mind-made suffering at the level of the mind that creates that suffering.
I know what you're saying there.
So Jesus says, you first have to enter the kingdom of heaven before, and the kingdom of heaven is not when you die. The kingdom of heaven is like when you're a little child, when there's no sense of separation. You're not dividing yourself against reality with your mind, with your beliefs. In my book, The Mandala of Being, I try to teach, where do we go when we leave the present moment? The mind goes into the future, it creates anxiety or hope. The mind goes into the past, it creates blame and guilt and regret and nostalgia. The mind starts to identify too much with other people or with ideas of God or with you know, giving so much power to money. Money's become a kind of demigod in our culture. And when you put the mind too far in that direction, into what I call the you stories about other people, about God, about money, about other religions, you end up in judgment that creates anger, or you give so much power to someone else, and when they don't do what you know, when they withdraw from you, you get hurt. So the mind
or frustrated.
Well, and jealous.
Yeah,
and
jealous.
Envious.
You know, I'm actually looking at Gail Ellen was just fabulous. She got me into a play called Liberating Jesus. Have you heard of that?
No.
The play is called Liberating Jesus, and the man who wrote the play and performed it is a man named Leonard Jacobson.
Mm.
And it's about Jesus coming back and explaining how he feels about things.
Well, look, everybody has their own take on Jesus, but it depends on your level of realization.
So he goes, the time is now. Jesus has returned after a long and difficult journey since his death upon the cross. He has much to share with us about his life and death and how his teaching has been misunderstood and misused. It's a very interesting play, and I invite listeners to actually go to LeonardJacobson.com, and that's LeonardJacobson.com, and check it out. The DVD is there. He's an amazing man. You'll love his conversation as he straightens this out on the misinterpretations of Christ. And he's actually in partnership with a wonderful woman named Mary, which I find quite amusing. Richard, I was wondering if, are you familiar with a book called Eat, Love, and Pray? Or no, Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth Gilbert?
I've heard a little bit about it, yeah, but I'm not very familiar at all, no.
Really want to read this book. This is just an extraordinary book, and it's actually underscoring in a rather eloquent way, but a very cutely spoken. The woman's a very clever, very good, very humorous writer, and it's the story of a woman who gets divorced and decides that because she didn't want to do what she had thought she had wanted to do, which was to get married and have kids. She wanted to travel the world. So she actually travels to Rome, and she learns Italian. She decides to take a year off and to do different things that she had wanted to do. So she goes to Rome and she learns Italian and she eats good meals. And then she goes to Guru Mai's ashram in India and spends another 3 months there and gets, or 4 months there, and gets very deeply involved in that work and has marvelous, marvelous meditational experiences, and just, it's just a high quality stuff. And then she gets to Bali, where she wanted to hang out with a Balinese medicine man, and she does. She hangs out with him for about 3 or 4 months, but one of the most remarkable conversations in that book, and I think it underscores what you're talking about too, he calls her Liz, and he talks in a very interesting, sweet Balinese way, and he goes, Liz, I know you meditate. I teach you the 7 levels to heaven in meditation. Would you like to know them? And she goes, yeah, that would be great. And he goes, Liz, I also teach you 7 meditations to hell. And she goes, why would I want to go to hell? Why would I want to meditate to go to hell? And he goes, Liz, they all same place. They all same place.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to heaven? He said, he was telling her basically that heaven and hell, our concepts of them, are simply concepts. That we will end up in the same place, and we can actually do it by meditating ourselves through joy and happiness and lightness to this place, or by actually taking ourselves through pain, grief, sorrow, and loss.
Well, I guess, you know, if you know how you create hell for yourself and you want to keep doing it, then that's your free choice.
Yeah, I don't...
If you really say to yourself, you know, boy, my marriages haven't worked. I've hurt myself. I see how much I've not really understood my children. I keep intruding in their lives. It doesn't really help them. It doesn't really help me. It doesn't really help us. I mean, if you see how you create hell, and that's what I tried to write in the book, how is it we create our own personal hell? If you see how, you can stop it. Then, if you stop it, you start to realize you don't have to create heaven. You're already in it.
Well, we've been
just
told
to stop creating
right.
hell.
It says if we don't do the wrong thing, somehow we've sinned, okay? And because we've sinned, we're going to be thrown or cast into eternal damnation. And I just don't believe any of that.
Well, I agree.
And I think that's the problem. You know, it's like almost puncturing the veil.
But what if somebody does believe it, Val? What if they do believe it?
They should try reading the Essene Gospels. That's what I have to say.
But, you know, I don't believe you'll ever get somebody to change because you proselytize and say, look, read my stuff. They change when they're ready. They change in a timing that none of us can really understand.
Something strikes you, Richard, you know, like when I was reading the book.
Exactly.
Struck me in that moment, and I got it.
Right. So you, but I wouldn't. I don't go around the world proselytizing. Where I show up, people show up because they're magnetized to be there through some sort of sympathetic sense of connection. I just keep keeping Mikey in my consciousness. It's impossible to say he's wrong to do what he wants to do, because it's important that he does do what he wants to do. Will that stop the process? I doubt it. Haven't we been trying to stop that kind of process forever? And we did prohibition, and so people found another way to get alcohol.
That we always find another way.
So if you start to say that what someone else is doing is wrong, they'll find some other way to be right. If we try to make something conscious, and we have laws, so let's take them into a courthouse and talk about them. But these beliefs that are underneath a Christian coup, as he puts it, an evangelical coup in the military, those beliefs have to be challenged not on whether they're true or not, but what they create in the lives of people who believe it.
You'd have to actually be able to see the...
And what it creates in the lives of people who believe it is misery.
Well, what we need to do is we'll take a break right here, and we'll be right back. We're on the air with Dr. Richard Moss, author of The Mandala of Being, Discovering the Power of Awareness, and somebody I'm totally appreciating being on the air with today. And we want to thank Roberto's Bungalows in beautiful San Pancho, San Francisco, Nayarit, Mexico, for being sponsors of our program. And Steve and Diana, you have a beautiful place that you share with visitors. You have just... you create a fabulous experience for those who come to your home. And I appreciate what you've done, and I hope that everybody that hears this and is looking for a place to relax, to get away, to find qualities that were apparent in the culture 50 years ago, 40 years ago, that's what's happening in San Pancho. It's a community that's putting itself together, and it's doing it with celebration. You can reach them by calling 971-239-4120. That's 971-239-4120. You can also visit Dr. Richard Moss, and his website is richardmoss.com, and there you can find out about the free web course that's being offered. You can pick up his book. I actually checked it out at Amazon. It's definitely over there, which is The Mandala of Being, Discovering the Power of Awareness. This man has an incredible number of very sophisticated, and I use that in the term of not better than, but sophisticated and well-studied and well-evolved people that have read his material, and Richard gets an A+. So that's, of course, why he got invited to be on Waking Up in America. If you want to hook up with Mikey Weinstein tomorrow, you can actually call Eileen Proctor, who's sponsoring the event, and RSVP. It's 310-271-5857. It's located in the Beverly Hills area, and his book is With God on Our Side, Michael L. Weinstein, and there you go on him. So back to Richard Moss. And Richard, what are some techniques or some concepts that we might be able to evolve our listeners? Because listening to all of this is great, but... what's a practice that somebody could actually take to achieve what you're talking about? I'm doing the Course in Miracles, for instance, every day, and that helps me. It gives me something to pay attention to, something to practice. What would you suggest?
Yeah, what I suggest is and I think of it like a compass. And to try to say this very simply, when we lose connection to ourselves, when we lose being in the present moment, and we have to first say, well, what's the present moment? Well, the present moment is a state of alertness, a state of receptivity. It's the light and the color and the quality of things exactly as they are, not distorted by judgments we make about things. So it's a state of receptivity. We're in our bodies. We're relaxed. We're here.
Kind of an isness is what I think of it as.
Like, exactly. And people really experience this in greater or lesser depth. All of us have. It's one of those days where everything is right and you don't really know why, but there's a glorious quality to the light, and things feel right and you feel connected, and there's just a simple joy. Okay, we can say that that's the now that's available all the time to all of us, but then our minds come in and we don't stay connected to ourselves. Where we go is into the past, And we tell ourselves stories that we wouldn't be experiencing what we're experiencing now if we hadn't lived in a certain way. So I heard someone just saying very recently, I'm no longer of much use to my children. And so she was a person remembering how important she was to her children as a mother when they were very young. Of course, I wouldn't, if I say to myself, if my wife or says to herself, we have three grown children, 26, 32, 34. If she says to herself, I'm no longer of use to my children, she's going to be suffering. So the woman that was saying this, when she said this, she was just suffering. When that's what happens with a thought.
It seems like if you have to make yourself of use, that's what's making her suffer, is the concept of use. And the reality of the situation is her children probably really appreciate her and no work is required.
And they'll appreciate her even more when she stops poisoning herself with thoughts like that. But we have to understand how all of us do it. We go into the future and say there won't be enough money. We go into the future and say he's not going to stay with me. Or we ask ourselves, should I stay in this marriage? And if you really say what's happening right now, without those thoughts, life starts to become quite wonderful.
Do you know Michael Beckwith, Reverend Michael Beckwith?
Sure. Not personally, but yes.
He's hot. And he did this really, he did an exercise that you would just really absolutely love. And Michael, forgive me if I don't do this perfectly. But basically what he said was, he'll have about 800 to 1,000 people in our congregation, at a particular meeting. And he goes, and he has everybody raise their hand that has money concerns, right? I'm going to say 75 to 80% of the congregation raised their hands, right? And the next thing he says to them, okay, now, how many of you have money problems in this moment? How many of you don't have enough money in this very moment? And there was no hands that went up. It's like, in that moment, there's no problem. And that's what he demonstrated to us so magnificently.
Well, that's the whole point. It's the mind creates, it poisons this moment with a story of that I won't have enough money. It poisons this moment with a story that I wasn't a good mother or I wasn't a good parent. It poisons this moment with a judgment of some other person when we say, he doesn't understand me, or she's too controlling, or he's not spiritual enough. We poison ourselves every moment. And so when you ask me what's the practical thing that I teach, basically I teach people to carry a compass that says, whoops, now my mind's in the future, come back, start right now. Be right here, right now.
So a clue for them would be if they're judging anything.
No, if they're in the future, the clue will be that they're anxious or worried, or they're creating a fantasy of hope. So we don't ever create a fantasy of hope unless we've just told ourselves some kind of inner story about disaster that's going to happen. And then we tell ourselves a story about how we can avert that or how things will work out. So the mind, when it's in the future, bounces back and forth between anxiety and hope, fear and hope, worry and hope.
Mm.
The mind in the past bounces back and forth between guilt and blame, regret and blame. The mind, when it's too far into other people, bounces back and forth between anger and hurt, anger and hurt. I'm the wounder or I'm the wounded. I'm the victim or I'm the perpetrator. And when the mind is over into beliefs about who we ourselves are, stories about ourselves, because our real self is a deep awareness that isn't something you can find. It's something that you are. Your being is not what you think. Your being is deeper than that. So the stories we have about ourselves always either make us bigger, so we become special by saying something about ourselves, in which we're grandiose. I call it grandiose specialness. Or we tell ourselves stories about ourselves that diminish us. I call that depressive specialness. So grandiose specialness is I know better. I know what people need. And depressive specialness is I'm not lovable. I'm too fat. I'm not attractive. And in that moment, you're in pain.
And you are that thing.
And you do that to yourself. You identify with it. It becomes your sense of self. People do this all the time. Now, understand that the man who's in the military, in the Marine Corps, who's joining this organization that Mikey's talking about, that he's fighting against, they do that because they believe stories about themselves that have been told to them by ministers or told to them by other people who believe their stories about themselves. They have pain, and they want to find a reason to explain their pain, so it has to do with other people who don't believe the way they do.
No, it's interesting, Richard. I've met two...
And you know, Val, we'll never get away from that until each of us wants to be responsible for our own mind. And the only way, I want to finish this, just so, because you were saying, how are we going to change this?
Yeah.
You can't force a person to become responsible for their mind. I mean, the people that created our Constitution, they had a lot of responsibility. They were well-educated. They thought about things, and they were very practical. But a democracy requires an educated public population. And the reason we should separate church and state is because state takes intelligence, and religion doesn't take a whole lot of intelligence. You know, if we're going to run a government that's good for people, we have to really think about things and understand how people have different positions, different concerns, different fears. Religion doesn't work at that level. Certain levels of religion certainly can teach us how to be better human beings, but many times the whole belief, especially with, you know, fundamentalists, is that the world isn't safe. You know, we're going to be destroyed unless we do what God wants.
Well, when our forefathers and mothers had one nation under God, what do you think they had in mind?
One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. As for me, the problem with the word God is simply, it's, you know, there's no way you can separate your own beliefs from God. You don't know.
My personal concept of God is a God, I would have to say I kind of fall in the Kundalini arena on that, and that my concept of God has to do with a frequency that's attainable by all. And that it has to do with removing one's heavy baggage, so to speak, and moving up the body's frequency, and then that everything becomes solvable, and the, quotes, God is actually a frequency that's available to all of us. That's what I think God is.
Well, that's beautiful.
So I live for that. The breath work that I was actually talking about and alluded to earlier on the program, I actually devised a process called directed breath back in 1984, actually. And I actually had a private practice of 28 active clients. I always hated calling them patients. And after I did the breath work with them for about 3 months, Richard, I had three of the people left. That's how I ended up getting on the radio in the first place, because I realized I was like a chiropractor. I discovered that I could actually evaporate these past memories, these things that didn't get complete, almost like little memory bubbles. And that by this process that I do, that I can actually help people access that memory and decharge it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, their consciousness actually evolves to the age that they are. What I noticed over the years is that whatever age the person was,
mm-hmm,
where their memory was blocked, that they were emotionally that age, and then the moment you cleared that, they then evolved to the next level.
Well, that's right.
So that's why I think God is possible for everyone, but I think that it requires that we let go of our rage and our baggage, and we complete the past. I actually used George Bush. First of all, I experienced being raped when he was put himself into the White House, and I realized that the depth of my rage and my pain actually had to do with previous incidences in my past. I mean, I was incapable of acting. I was incapable of being intelligent on the subject at all. I just seethed and raged.
But, you know, I can certainly empathize, Val. I can totally empathize. I know how many people felt that way. And inside of myself, there was a sorrow, because basically I kind of knew what was coming. But I have to say this, we don't serve anyone by descending into confusion in ourselves.
Well, that's what I was telling you. I actually used this as
your own work,
kind of origin to clear myself.
Absolutely.
And I can, Richard, I couldn't even look at the newspaper. If I saw his face, I would fly off the handle. I don't know. I look at the newspaper and I go, what can I gain from this lesson? So I think that's what Barbara Marx Hubbard was talking about that I alluded to earlier, that we can, and what you're talking about, that we can use these times to evolve ourselves.
And, you know, we can, use these times to evolve ourselves. It's an interesting time. I mean, think about it. Isn't fundamentalism a fear reaction because change is happening too quickly?
Oh, absolutely. You know? And actually, Richard, I'm looking at the clock. Oh, my God. You've got 1 minute left to say anything that you would like to say on Waking Up in America, and then we'll have a little chat afterwards.
Okay. Well, I don't know what I'd want to say.
No, have at it.
Oh, well, I'd say this. I know from my life, my own life, I mean, what you said, that you were able to use your own work to free yourself from suffering. I found a work that set me free, and I've been able to share it with many thousands of people over the years as I travel. And that the mandala idea, the idea that it doesn't help you to be in the future, it doesn't help you to be in the past, the judgments about yourselves and others don't help, that you have, every human being has the power to awaken to their deeper nature. All you have to do is say, I want to learn, and then follow your heart, follow the synchronistic things that lead you deeply. That there are problems in our world, there will always be problems, that we have to choose our own life and live out of ourselves, that's a deeper truth. And I believe that every human being that learns to root out their own self-made suffering radiates a light into the world that lifts everyone, helps everyone become more true.
What a perfect way to end the show, and I so appreciate this. This program has been produced by Kirkgaard Media, our radio partners, KoningCompany.com, Roberto's Bungalows, Dr. James Murphy in Memoriam, our executive producer, Nathan Jett, and thanks also to all of you who helped produce this show, our chief technical officer, Pete Laubach, webmaster Jack Avikas, to Jeff Spinard and the team at Voice America, to Ben Migan for the theme music, Almost Ordinary People, Mikey Weinstein and Dr. Richard Moss for being here today. What an extraordinarily fortunate life we have. God bless you all and take care.
Waiting at the door, and it's time to open. This is for you. This is for all in you.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time on VoiceAmerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at HeavenIncorporated.com.